My name is Harald Welte. I'm the maintainer of the Linux firewalling subsystem known as Netfilter and IP tables in the 2.4 kernel series. And the Netfilter team is also working, of course, on new ideas, new extensions, changes for future kernel versions, future versions of the Linux packet filtering subsystem. So this talk today is going to be about the future. It's not about what we currently have in our Linux systems, but it's about what we intend to have in future versions of the Linux kernel. First, I'm going to say I'm going to state a couple of, pre-requirements for this talk, so nobody is surprised or, just want to make sure that everybody who is here at least knows what Netfilter IP tables is and sort of has an idea how it works or how it is used. So if anybody is in here who maybe has never used or had a look at the current Netfilter IP table subsystem in the Linux kernel, it's not going to be very interesting, I guess, because this talk assumes certain knowledge on Netfilter IP tables and, of course, on packet filtering in general and on how TCP/IP networks work. So if you feel like you're not familiar with that, it's maybe a good idea to go to some of the other interesting talks, which are, maybe more interesting anyway. Okay, so let's start. The Linux kernel has a history of ever-changing packet filtering subsystems. If you think about the 1.2 kernel series, we had from BSD ported IPF. IPFW system. In the 2.0 kernel series, we had IPFW ADM. In the 2.2 series, we had IP chains. And finally, in the 2.4 series, we had IP tables. So what's going to happen with further kernels? Are we going to see another change again? I'm afraid we will have to see. Most likely, this change will not happen before 2.6 will finally come out. But we will see a change for the next before the next kernel. The version after 2.6, we certainly will see a change again. So why does it always need to change? Why cannot we just stick to a certain firewalling subsystem? The problem is that at a certain point, after you have implemented something, you always know ways of how to improve it. Because after implementing it, you have experienced the weaknesses with what you have just implemented right now. And you have ideas on how to extend it. And at some point, these ideas might go as far as rewriting parts of it or redesigning the architecture. So what kind of problems do we have with Netfilter IP tables? Wasn't Netfilter IP tables meant to solve all the packet filtering problems out there? There are a couple of problems. I'm going to describe them in depth. Basically, it's three groups of problems. We have code replication. We have a bad support for dynamic firewalling rule sets. We have no API for third-party programs to interact with the packet filtering subsystem. We don't have high availability. And on the last slide, I'm going to talk about other current work, what's currently going to be developed. What's currently under development, but which doesn't fit in any of the other categories. So for those of you who have just arrived, I'm going to repeat that this talk is not about how to use Netfilter IP tables or how Netfilter IP tables work, but rather this talk is about how Netfilter IP tables is going to evolve into something different in the next upcoming kernel series. What kind of problems do we have? We have code replication between IP tables, IPv6 tables, and ARP tables. Most of you know that there is IP tables for IPv4. At a certain point, somebody has, quote, ported it to IPv6, and very recently, David Miller has ported it again to ARP. So you now can filter IPv6 and ARP packets in the same way you can filter IPv4 packets. The problem is that IP tables itself was never meant to support multiple protocols. A Netfilter is, but IP tables isn't. And this ports are actually copy and paste ports. So you do copy and paste and you edit everything which is IPv4 specific into IPv6 specific stuff. And of course, in the end, you have two pieces of code, and within after ARP tables has been added, you have three pieces of code basically doing the same job, which is iterating over a list of rules and matching against certain criteria. It's absolutely the same job. But it's three copies of this code. So it's three times exactly the same code. And in case there is a bug somewhere, you need to fix it at three places. And, you know, one of them at least gets missed. And then you have inconsistencies and some bugs there and some bugs fixed in the other part. So, code replication. There, in addition to this core IP tables versus IPv6 tables, ARP tables, code replication, there's other code replication in the layer 3 independent matches. We have matches for MAC addresses. MAC addresses are not part of an IP packet. MAC addresses are part of the layer 2 header on Ethernet or whatever kind of layer 2 you might be using. There's also a match on interface name, so you can say if a packet comes in from ETH0, ETH0 is certainly nothing inside the IP packet. It's an interface name local to your system. And right now, in the case of MAC addresses, for example, we have a MAC address match for IP tables, we have a MAC address match for IPv6 tables, and we have yet another MAC address match for ARP tables. Great, isn't it? We have three times the same functionality implemented in exactly the same way. It's just like, it's even this, like if you look at the C file, it's the same file, but like five lines are different because it uses different structure names. Like it's instead of struct IP tables, it's struct IPv6 tables. Wow, great difference. So there is again code replication. The same goes for the user space library. There is a library called libiptc, and libiptc is a thin layer between the kernel space and the user space commands, and it manages the communication of rule sets between kernel and user space. And libiptc again is something which is needs to exist for IPv4 and for IPv6 because the structures are different and so on. Again, the same goes for the user space tools. There is IP tables and IPv6 tables, and again, it's a copy and paste port, and it sucks. this is a real problem. Another problem is we don't suit the needs for dynamically changing rule set. Have to go a little bit further at that point. The way the communication between kernel and user space of the rule set works right now is that you type in a command to add a single rule. You type IP tables minus A, input, whatever. So you add a rule to your firewall rule set. So what happens in the background is that the whole table, the whole filter table with all its chains, input, forward, output, whatever user-defined chains you might have with all of the rules is copied from kernel to user space. Then in user space, the modification is made, a single rule is added, and then the whole big table is copied back into the kernel. And this is an atomic transaction. So we hold a lock in the kernel while this procedure is made. It's really obvious that this is not a perfect solution. So why did we do it in the beginning? IP chains had differently. So in IP chains, if you add a rule, only the single rule is communicated to the kernel and inserted in the kernel. But IP tables does this whole table atomic replacement strategy. Why? The reason why was that the counters, I suppose you know that every rule has a byte and packet counter attached to it. And the counters, screensaver, sorry. The counters in IP chains, if you do an IP chains minus L to list the IP chains rules, the counters are not an atomic snapshot. So it reads out the first rule, the second rule, the third rule, the fourth rule, and while it reads out the rules, packets are still flowing through the kernel. So the counters get inconsistent. So you don't get an atomic snapshot of the counters. So the idea with IP tables was we want to have an atomic snapshot of all the counters associated with the rules. This is why we did this atomic replacement. But the atomic replacement of the whole table becomes a problem when your firewall rule set changes all the time. If you have a static firewall rule set, like you set up your firewall and it's running for a week or even a whole day with the same rule set. You don't care. It's like one times this big copy and paste when your firewall script is loaded. But after that, it doesn't change, so you don't care. But in the case you have dynamically changing rule sets, which are not becoming more and more common due to intrusion detection systems, which interactively influence the firewall rule set, you might have really lots of rule set changes all the time. And this is becoming a problem. So like, if let's say you have a large firewall with like 100K rules. You have 100,000 rules which are copied from kernel to user space and back again every time you change a single rule in there, which is, of course, suboptimal. So we need a solution for that. That's a big problem, and it's going to become an even bigger problem as these kind of dynamic rule sets become more common. And another problem is it's too extensible. IP tables is too extensible. What kind of a problem is this? IP tables was meant to be a playground for people who want to write their own matches and targets, and everybody can contribute some new functionality to IP tables. It did work. We have a very flexible interface. You can write new matches and new targets, and you have extensions and plugins and modules and all that kind of stuff. And it's great. I think there is no single week where I don't receive new extensions in my email. No, certainly not. For, you know, like 2.5 years now. It's great that all these extensions show up, but the problem is it's difficult for any front end, like a graphical user interface which configures the firewall, to deal with all these new features all the time. It's like every week there are no new matching criteria and new targets for IP tables, and somebody who writes a configuration front end will always be late. I mean, he's always trying to catch up those new features. Oh, now there is a TTL match. Oh, now there is whatever, a string match or a random match or something like this. So a configuration front end will never be able to cover the whole functionality because the functionality is always changing or increasing at least. So this is a problem, that front ends are always incomplete and out of date by definition. And there is also no high-level API for any other program, like a distributed firewall configuration management tool or just a normal graphical user interface. There is no API other than either forking and execing IP tables for every single rule or piping into standard in of IP tables restore, which is slightly more efficient but still not really a good interface for communication with the firewall rule set. So those are the big problems we have. So how do we solve those problems? Or how do we intend to solve those problems? The code replication, mouse pointer. The code replication is actually not too difficult to solve, but it's a fundamental architectural change which makes it quite difficult to get it into the kernel. So what we want to have, or what we intend to have, or what we are currently implementing, is a layer 3 independent layer. A layer 3 independent layer for submitting rules to the kernel, traversing packet rule sets, and registering matches or targets. So it's like all this functionality which is not really dependent on any network protocol. It's a fundamental abstract thing, like how to communicate a rule set from kernel to user space. There is no relation to any protocol with that. It's just a general communications facility. Or like traversing a list. You have a list of rules and you iterate over the lists and you call matches and you jump to another list and this kind of stuff. It's not related to IPv4 or not related to IPv6 at all. It's a general abstract concept. So we need a layer of functionality inside the code, which is layer 3 independent, to do that. The solution is called PKT tables. PKT tables because it's packet tables. It doesn't care if it's IPv4 or IPv6 or ARP or any other kind of network packet. It's just packet tables. And the idea is to have a packet tables core, which provides all this functionality, and then you have layer 3 dependent modules like packet tables IPv4, packet tables IPv6, which then register layer 3 handlers with packet tables. So there is an additional layer, this generalized packet tables, and then you can load modules for any layer 3 protocol you want to. That's how it is supposed to solve. And also libraries in user space, the libIP, I'm going to talk about that later, about the library issue. We will provide a sophisticated API for third-party programs to interact with the firewall rule set. Supporting dynamic rule sets. As I said, the atomic table replacement turned out to be a bad idea. We need a new interface, and if we look at a different problem, that is policy routing, has the same problem and has a good, from our point of view, a good solution, which is RT NetLink. How many of you do know what RT NetLink is all about? Okay, well, that's zero. Okay, now I have to explain what RT NetLink is. How many of you do know what NetLink in general is? Oh, yeah, okay, one. Great. Okay, NetLink is a non-portable interface in the Linux kernel, a socket-based interface for communication between kernel and user space. So you can have multicast-capable socket between kernel code and user space code. And the idea is that in the case of RT NetLink, which is the reason why NetLink was invented in the first place, is that imagine you have the routing table in the kernel, and then you have an administrator who types in, you know, route add blah blah blah. He changes the routing table from user space with a command line, and then you have routing daemons like Zebra or GateD or any of the others available. And they all need to get notified by each other what is changing. You know, the routing daemon is changing the rule set, the administrator is changing the rule set, and the kernel, of course, has to take care of these changes and to notify the others. So the idea is that as soon as you type in route add blah, 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 you change the routing table entry manually, you generate actually a message which is sent through a socket to the kernel. And because it's a multicast socket, this same message is sent to everybody else who is interested in routing. So the Zebra receives your manual routing table change as a packet on a special socket. And Zebra will then look if it matches or whatever, if it conflicts with its internal routing table, and then possibly delete it. You can have that if you have Zebra running on a system and Zebra takes care of the default route because the default route was imported by OSPF or some other means, and you type in route add delete default. You hit enter, and at the time you hit enter, the default route has already been added automatically again because Zebra was notified that you deleted the default route, but Zebra knows that itself knows where the default route is, so it again inserts it. So this is the idea of RT NetLink, and we have the same problem with IP tables in the case there is an intrusion detection system which wants to change the packet filter configuration, and you have an administrator who wants to change the packet filter configuration, and you have the kernel who does the packet filtering, and then you have this NetLink socket in between, and when somebody adds a rule with the upcoming PKT tables, this again is some NetLink message which is sent to everybody who is interested in configuration changes of the packet filtering subsystem, including the intrusion detection system. So everybody knows what's going on with packet filtering. I mean, everybody who's interested in and has the necessary privileges, of course. So this is how we are going to solve that problem. There's a couple of libraries and a couple of layers. What we call PKTT NetLink is... first, there is NF NetLink, which is NetFilter NetLink. It provides services to all the subsystems of NetFilter. Then there's PKTT NetLink, which is PKT Tables NetLink. It's a horrible name. I don't know. But anyway, names can change. It's not important. If somebody proposes a better name, I'm open to anything. It's PKTT NetLink. And PKTT NetLink is used for communicating PKT tables rules between kernel and user space. Then there is CT NetLink, which does also already exist right now, but it's not in a standard kernel, is connection tracking NetLink. So you can read out the connection tracking table from user space using those NetLink messages. You can modify entries, you can insert new entries, you can delete entries from user space. So you from user space, any process which has the necessary privileges can delete entries from the connection tracking state table inside the kernel, or modify, alter, whatsoever. And then there are the already existing mechanisms of ULog, the user space logging, and IPQ, the user space queuing inside the IP tables framework, which already use netlink right now, but we will insert this additional NF netlink layer in between. Okay. Communication with other programs. That's what I was talking about. It's very inefficient if you, as another program who wants to configure the firewalling rule set, it's very inefficient if for every rule change you need to fork and exec, and then IP tables loads all of its, you know, 50 to something plugins, and then it's just horrible. The amount of overhead you introduce. So we will provide a set of libraries. Libnf netlink does actually exist to a certain degree already. It's the low layer communication for the netlink based netfilter communication. And there will be libpktt netlink for rule modifications. And this is where the interesting part starts. Everything which is now done inside the IP tables user space code will be done inside libpktt netlink. That means all the plugins which are necessary for new matches or new targets are handled within this libpktt netlink. And the libpktt netlink will provide a public API with query functions about available matches and targets, parameters, and so on. So you can write a program which configures the firewalling rule set, and this program can, on any system, can just ask libpktt netlink, like, what matching criteria does this particular kernel on this system support? What targets does this particular system support? So then it receives a list of matching criteria. Then it can ask, like, what parameters, what options does the TCP match support? And then it receives an answer which states, well, the TCP plugin supports source port, which is a 16-bit unsigned integer, destination port, which is a 16-port unsigned integer. It supports TCP flags, which is like this, and it describes the format and enumerations, whatever. It goes even further. Then the program can say, well, please tell, I want to prompt the user with a help message. Please tell me what is the help information for the source port parameter of the TCP extension for PKT tables. And then it receives some string, which is the help message, and this help message can be displayed to the user. So with this functionality, you can write a graphical user interface or any other kind of firewall configuration program which doesn't know anything about PKT tables. It doesn't know anything. It doesn't know what functionality is there on the system. It doesn't know if this system can match on the TTL value or not, because, like, you know, 2.4.14 cannot, 2.4.18 can. It doesn't need to know all this kind of stuff. At runtime, it can query everything from this library. There's some sort of generic structure and conversion functions and all kind of stuff. I'm not going to talk about this in too much detail. It's just that there's going to be a very high layer API which can easily be used from other applications. libipq and libipulog as well. Yeah, libipq and libipulog are libraries which currently exist for particular features like the IPQ mechanism and the ulog mechanism. They will stay API compatible with the current version. So there is no need for changes from programs which use it. libiptc will go away. libiptc, as I said, is the thin library between kernel and user space right now for rule set communication, and it was never designed to be used by anybody else than IP tables itself. It's very hard to use it for anything useful at all right now, because it's so low level. It's almost impossible to do anything useful with it. So it will go away, and people who use it right now, sorry, people, you will have to change. I mean, there's going to be a grace period, but it's just almost impossible to provide a backwards compatibility because the architecture is so fundamentally different. It was never meant to be used, so if you use it, it's your fault. That's what I wanted to tell about the problems we have and which are going to be solved. Any questions on this part before I start going on with any of the other parts of this presentation? Yeah.
Will it be a merge with the EB tables for bridging?
The question was, will there be a merge with EB tables, which is for bridging? I think there is no... I haven't thought about that, but as the PKT table structure is so general, I don't see any reason why EB tables could not be converted to be an EB PKT table. So it's too... As I said, naming is, you know, you can call it whatever you want. I don't see any technological reason why it shouldn't be merged or converted to this new architecture. Any other questions to what I've said? Yeah.
You mentioned that the interface will allow changing of individual rules instead of changing a whole table.
Yes.
But what if you want multiple changes to be atomic?
Good question. It would be nice if we provided this functionality. I cannot assure you that it actually will appear. It's a nice thing to have, but in the current design, it's not present. We might want to add that, depending on whether we have the time or not. RTNetLink doesn't provide similar functionality, and dynamic routing table updates seem to work quite well. So I suppose, or I assume by this interface, that anybody receives updates in real time. If a single rule is modified, everybody else is notified of that modification. I think if there is a sort of cooperative behavior of these applications and they are written in the right way, it's not really absolutely necessary to have this atomicity. And then you can emulate atomicity by using user-defined chains and like creating a new user-defined chains, adding the rules in there, and then just modify a single rule which then jumps to the new user-defined chain. So it's like, yes, I know it's nice, but it's so hard to implement. We'd rather leave that as option for the future. please, I feel free for discussion. Start a flame war on the mailing list. That's what it's meant for. as I said, it's what we are currently planning. It's not that it has to be. It's not God that dictates this. Yeah, okay, further questions? There were a couple of them.
Is it already going into 2.5 something? Or?
No. The initial idea was to get it in 2.5, but then I had too much other work to do before the feature freeze. As you know, there was a feature freeze on Halloween last year, and due to the size of this change, so to speak, of the packet filtering subsystem, I don't see a very good chance that this, even if it might be ready in time, that it will still be included in 2.5. But who knows? Maybe 2.5 will take another, 1.5 years, and then we are happy in this particular case. But I don't know. I think there is a very, very small chance, but it's really small. So I wouldn't assume it. I wouldn't expect it. But then, as this PKT tables can coexist with IP tables, there is no need for removing IP tables once we add PKT tables. So I think at any later point in time, even when 2.6 is released, we can add it as something new. It's like, we don't change IP tables. People can still use IP tables. It's the same code. There is no compatibility issues. IP tables are still there. But in addition, there is PKT tables. And who wants to use PKT tables can do so, but everybody else can still use IP tables. And, of course, the backwards compatibility layers for IP chains and IPFW ADM inside IP tables. Because I don't plan to put any backwards compatibility code into PKT tables. Because the architecture is so different. It's there is no generalized way of converting things or on mapping this onto each other. So it's difficult. So IP tables will be there and PKT tables will be there and they will coexist peacefully. Yeah, maybe we should go on with the further parts of the presentation. But if there is anybody has an important question on what I've been talking right now, please feel free to ask. Okay. Failover. I wonder how many of the slides I can actually show you. okay. introduction is good. One of the requirements on, well, let's say recent firewall or packet filter implementations is failover. Like you have two or more firewall systems, and you have one which is active, and you have a second or a third or even a fourth or whatever number of systems which are hot standby systems. And when your firewall goes down because your CPU is melting because the CPU fan was damaged or whatever, the second firewall can immediately take over everything which happened on the first firewall, and you have a failover situation. This kind of failover is pretty well known for things like web servers. For any kind of application, there are failover solutions. So what is so special about firewall failover? In the past, there was nothing special. With stateless packet filtering, there is nothing special about firewalling failover. So with IP chains, or even with IP tables, as long as you don't use connection tracking or network address translation, you can have two boxes, configure the same rule set, configure the same, everything, and then you use a solution like Heartbeat or VRRP daemon to do the actual failover. It will work. People are doing this right now. It works. But then, as soon as you... the only problem remaining in stateful case is distribution of the packet filtering rule set. So if you make a change on the active firewall, you need to propagate that change of the rule set to the slave node. But it's a simple problem. It's nothing we need to think about. It's like, some user space problem. As kernel programmer, we usually don't care too much about that. It's not that important. And if you don't change it that often, you can even do it manually or use rsync to copy your script over or whatever. It's like, you don't care. The problem starts with stateful firewalling, because at that point, your firewall, the currently active one, is gathering state information which is not present in the individual packet data. So this state data needs somehow to be synchronized to the single other node or the multiple other nodes in this failover situation. In addition, when you use network address translation, there is not only state information, but there is also information about the NAT mappings for the individual connections, which need to be synchronized to the other node. The question is, how do we solve this high availability problem, or this failover problem? There are now a couple of slides which introduce you how the connection tracking subsystem in NetFilter works. I'm not going to go through the slides right now. It's just too much stuff. There are basically two ways we have come up to implement this failover system in IP tables and NetFilter. There is one solution which I call the poor man's failover. You will understand why I call it the poor man's failover when we are finished with that slide. The idea, the principle behind the poor man's failover is that every node does its own tracking, there is no state replication. So it's like you have two machines which are connected to the same networks, real shared medium, no switches, hubs. And the active firewall is actually forwarding packets, and the slaves are sniffing packets. So the active node is gathering state information just as it does right now, just as a single firewall node does right now. It gathers state information by looking at the packets which it is forwarding right now. And the slave nodes are gathering state information by sniffing packets on the two interfaces. Let's assume a simple case where a firewall has just two interfaces. Because it sees all the packets on one interface, and it sees all the packets on the other interface. Because it can just sniff communication on both of these interfaces. So the slave node can do its tracking based on packet sniffing, and the active does it by the normal connection tracking mechanism which we have right now. Yeah, this is the connect every node to shared media approach, which is in the presentation here, this one. Then there is another way, which is even poorer. It's like copy all traffic to slave nodes. So you don't connect them to shared media, but your active firewall, in addition to do firewalling, it just copies all traffic to the slave node, so the slave node can also do the tracking on this traffic. Great idea. I just mentioned it to be complete. Advantages of this poor man's failover solution, the one with shared medium and every node is connected to every network, is that implementation is very easy. We just need to modify connection tracking that it doesn't work only on packets forwarded by the firewall, but also can track packets which are sniffed from other interfaces. And then again, existing means of address takeover can be used. I mean, as I said, there is Heartbeat, there is VRP Daemon, there are other solutions in the free software world for IP address takeover. Another advantage, a very, very big advantage, is that there is the same node in active and slave nodes. Because everybody does the tracking on the same packets, the load is exactly at the same height on all of the nodes. It's like there is no asymmetric load distribution or something. The master node doesn't have a higher load than in the normal case right now, because the active firewall node doesn't do any more work than a normal single computer firewall does right now. So there is no increased load, no additional performance issues associated with it. The remaining problem with that solution is that imagine you reboot one of the firewalling nodes. There is no initial state synchronization. It's like you have two nodes, they gather state information for like 2 days, and then you reboot one of them. And then, of course, the information of the previous 2 days is lost. And as we all know, TCP connections can live forever. There's certainly some information about still ongoing connections which is lost during the reboot, and there is no initial state synchronization. If you are a really, really poor man and a lazy man, you can say, well, I don't care, because after some time, the state information on the second